Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So, by the way, thanks for spending some time with us today. We do appreciate it. The Me Too movement. We were talking about this the other day. The Time Magazine Person of the Year. Basically, last year was kind of the women that came forward, the women that told their stories. And as that story evolved, there were all these different branches to it in different ways. And one of the things that came out of it was the number of, the volume, the dollars attributed to sitting, existing members of Congress who, we find out, and I hope this isn't breaking news to you, use taxpayer dollars to pay off some of these settlements.
Yeah, they actually had like a fund that they could tap into.
Slush fund.
Yeah, to pay off these settlements. So, I mean, in essence, it's our taxpayer dollars that are going to settle these suits, of which we didn't know that there was a settlement to be had for how much or who had settled.
Yeah.
Because of all of the red tape and secrecy surrounding these kinds of allegations. And I think a lot of people, myself included, were surprised at the number of settlements, at the amount of money and the lack of transparency when it came to all of this, because you just kind of walk through life, at least I do. Maybe you can call it naive, but if you're in Congress and you're making laws for our country and we've elected you, you're supposed to walk straight and narrow, not be sued or accused of sexual harassment, of which there have been some pretty serious allegations. Well, because of those serious allegations, because of those settlements, because the lack of transparency, Bruce, and the fact that there really wasn't an HR for the women to go to about any of this, it looks like things are about to change.
After months of negotiations, lawmakers have reached an agreement on legislation that would revamp how sexual harassment claims are dealt with in Congress.
And that legislation would hold members of Congress personally liable for awards and settlements stemming from harassment and any related retaliation that they personally commit.
Yeah, so if you have to
what
settle.
What a shock. I mean, the fact we need this is kind of disappointing.
Right?
Right?
If you settle, if you retaliate, you are going to be personally held responsible for those actions. We, the taxpayers, are not going to foot the bill for you anymore.
I am cautiously optimistic, Pamela, because keep in mind, up until very recently, they were all aware of the deal.
The members, I understand what you mean.
The members of Congress were all aware of the wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You get accused of sexual harassment, misconduct, and don't worry, we have a slush fund that'll pay it off. Now they've all come to Jesus. Now they've all, you know, found church and religion. And this is horrible. We should make the individual members pay. The proof is in the pudding. And let's see how. Let's see if they actually follow through on this.
Yeah, I'm not as cynical as you are. I think
they've been doing it for years.
But I think daylight is the best disinfectant. Because they've been doing it for years because they've been able to get away with it for
years.
And the amount of pressure that has mounted on them is what has led to these changes.
So they didn't have a moral stand for it. They're just worried about how it looks.
I don't care about the morality of it. I care about right and wrong. And it's wrong to sexually harass individuals and then have taxpayers to foot the bill for it. So if this happens because you're being forced to do it rather than you see the error of your ways, I don't care.
You don't care how they got to.
I don't care how they get to this point. I'm just glad that it appears as though they've gotten there.
This also affects lawmakers who end up leaving office. They cannot use taxpayer funds to pay for those settlements.
So this is something they're going to be voting on. It's cleared its way for a vote in both chambers, the House and the Senate. This is something that they've been negotiating on for quite some time, and this is the compromise that they have come up with. And when I say compromise, because it's not all working in favor of the individuals who accuse lawmakers of these kinds of impropriety. For instance, lawmakers will not be on the hook for discrimination settlements. And congressional staff who come forward with claims will not be provided free legal counsel.
So they are putting some caveats in there. They are putting in some exemptions for themselves that still, in some way, shape, or form, allow them to get away with bad behavior. Right? Because if they were private citizens, if they were corporate executives, these types of things would come out. If they were Hollywood executives, like, the other people don't get this kind of protection.
No, but again, it's not perfect, but it is progress. And I'll take progress over perfection, because it would also publicly identify members of Congress that settle harassment claims, along with how much they paid out. So we are getting
good.
Some transparency. We are getting some accountability. Is it everything that everybody wants? No, but that's how life is. You don't get everything you want. This is called a negotiation, and it's called a compromise. And I think that they are in the right lane right now.
I'm just and maybe it's all the new women being elected to Congress, you know, might change this a little. They bring a different perspective. Obviously, many of them have their own stories. I'm just a little cautious of the, you know, the fox is in charge of the hen house type argument, and that they will put on a show, but that some of these mostly men who have for decades acted inappropriately and allowed taxpayers to bail them out. I just wonder if they're suddenly going to start behaving.
Well, here's the deal. Even if they don't start behaving, mm-hmm. we're going to now know. We now at least have the opportunity.
And we don't have to pay for it.
Yeah. So
yeah.
So even
okay,
if
I'll give you.
Even if you still want to behave like a piggy piggy oink oink,
yep.
you can. It's just now you're not going to be able to hide from it. Now you're not going to be able to have the taxpayers pay for it. Now there are going to be consequences for your action, which surprisingly enough has not been the case up until this compromise. Now
they make their own rules.
They're going to be voting on it hopefully here over the next 2 weeks. So
before the end of the session.
This is where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
Could this change? Yes. Could they not vote to pass it? Possibly. We're going to keep an eye on it because I think this is big. I think that this is the power of the Me Too movement. It's been a little over a year now, and we're really starting to see the impact it is having.
Are the Phoenix Suns really threatening to leave the city, or is it an empty threat, or was the threat even made? Well, next up, columnist for the Arizona Republic and AZ Central, Lori Roberts, who initially broke that story, will join us.
Should I stay or should I go? Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Should I stay or should I go?
Well, it's a question that had a lot of people wondering. What? I don't think most people thought it was even a thing. Could the Phoenix Suns pack up and leave? Well, that rumor, that allegation started just about a day and a half ago when Lori Roberts, kind of specifically, Pamela, a columnist here, said there was some evidence behind that.
Yeah, Lori Roberts is a columnist for the Arizona Republic and AZCentral.com. And in her opinion piece yesterday, it says this. Sarver's talking about moving, the council member told me. He basically told me the team will go if they don't get a renovated arena. Vegas and Seattle are the two he talked about.
So who is this Lori Roberts you speak of? Oh, look, we have on our KTAR newsmaker line. Good morning to you, Lori. How are you?
Good morning, Bruce and Pamela.
So, first off, the team, and we talked earlier, sent out their president, and Jason Rowley had to go around and try to disavow, apparently, what Robert Sarver said. It's your reporting that is the genesis of this. If we don't get the money for the arena, we're going to take our ball elsewhere. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, for weeks, he's been working quietly with city officials, the people negotiating this deal, to work out this deal. And at every juncture, the thing that he always says is he's going to, as the city people have told me, quote, lay out his options, unquote, which means leaving downtown Phoenix. I always took that to mean going out to one of the Indian reservations,
yeah,
or, you know, wherever he could convince somebody to build him an arena.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the last week, as he and the city were frantically trying to line up those votes because the votes were disappearing once this thing became public, in his conversations with one councilperson, he brought up the words Seattle and Las Vegas. I don't know why else those would come
sure.
up in conversation about, please, will you change your vote? I need your vote. Unless that was a threat. or a prediction or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But that is what was relayed to me by one member of the city council. And in talking to other members to hear if they'd heard those same things, they said, well, we don't necessarily take it as a threat, but certainly he has laid out his options. Well,
go ahead.
That's a threat.
Yeah, I agree.
It sounds like it to me. And apparently you've also spoken with the city manager about this as well. What did he tell you?
He told me that he didn't take it as a threat, that he took it as Sarver laying out his options. But I think that you will notice if you do a deeper dive into the conversations with the Sun CEO, when reporters have pushed him on this issue, would you go other places? Mm-hmm. He sort of defers and said, well, I don't remember his exact language, but something like, well, we're thinking about our future, but our future is really downtown. He hasn't committed to saying, no, absolutely not, we're not going anywhere.
Here's a little bit of what the CEO and president of the Suns, Jason Rowley, had to say to Mac and Gatos yesterday.
I'm not going to speculate on that one bit because we are focused right now, and what we've said again and again and again is that our option A, B, and C is to continue to operate the building and have the Phoenix Suns continue to be the NBA team in this market.
Yeah, but he didn't elaborate on what D, E, and F would be if A, B, and C fail.
Right. Perhaps I'm wrong, and maybe Sarver was simply telling this particular councilperson, vote for us, and, oh, by the way, this weekend I'm going to go to Las Vegas, and then I'm going to go vacation in Seattle. Maybe he didn't mean it that way at all, you know? I don't know. What I just heard in that clip was a guy who's saying, yeah, this is what we want to do, but we're not going to tell you what we're what we're prepared to do if you don't give us what we want.
Again, we're talking to Lori Roberts, columnist for The Republic and AZ Central. And Lori, you were one of the first ones also that were talking about the fact that this vote that was delayed until sometime in January, I don't want to say it was happening in secret, but it was hardly public knowledge. Nobody was out front leading the parade for this vote, and maybe had it not been for people starting to suddenly talk about it and ask questions, they might have gotten this vote through yesterday.
Well, right. I think it was last Monday or Tuesday. I mean, it was about 2 weeks ago that everybody heard, as soon as Kate Gallego, the mayor candidate who finished so far ahead of everyone else, as soon as she announced last month or reiterated an announcement that it's not a high priority for her to do this, that she thinks the city has more important things they need to be spending money on.
Shocking.
The city began these private meetings with the executive sessions of the council and city bureaucrats and Sarver's people to get this deal done. And then it was about a week ago that I heard, here are the terms of the deal, but it's a secret. So, you know, you call up the city, it's like, no, we can't talk about that. It's a secret.
So yeah.
I finally, they called us over. They called me and my boss and our city hall reporter, Jessica Boehm, over to meet with the city manager and Felda Williams a few hours before they were finally going to put this out. Because my question had been, okay, you've got the deal. You think you've got the votes lined up for the deal. When are you going to clue in the public to this so they can have some meaningful input? And the answer, of course, is the last possible moment do it, which was last Thursday night. And you know what's ensued since then. I think it's important that the citizens who are on the hook for this thing have a right to have some meaningful input. But what they did was they lined up those votes. They had those votes last week, I'm told. But as soon as it became public and the public began reacting and asking questions, there were a lot of cold feet over at City Hall.
Yeah, there are a lot of cold feet, hence the reason why they have delayed the vote until mid to late January. Again, we have Lori Roberts, a columnist from the Arizona Republic and AZCentral.com on the KTAR Newsmaker line for us. And forgive me a second here, Lori, because I just want to circle back because I don't want this to get lost. I just want to be clear that you spoke to a council person who says Robert Sarver says that they are thinking or they will potentially go to Vegas or Seattle if they don't get the renovation. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I was told by a city council person.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, I suppose they could argue, well, it's just part of a bigger plan. We always have to have a backup or whatnot. It's not exactly the line that they're selling today. And you know,
let me interrupt there.
No, please.
The context of this is important, is that they're trying to twist the arm of the council person
without a
doubt. Is a no vote.
Without a doubt.
Right. to me, you can just say, well, I'm just giving them the reality, but it's still a threat.
Yeah, we're in agreement on that, that they were absolutely, and that apparently the owner of the Suns, Robert Sarver, was reaching out to, calling, communicating with city council members in an effort to get a yes vote on this, the vote that didn't happen yesterday, and approve some, I think at the end of the day, it's $185 million of taxpayer dollars that would go to renovate the stadium with the implied threat, if I don't get that money, well, Seattle and Vegas might welcome me with open arms.
Right. And it's not just a one phone call with them. He was, while we were all in the dark, we mere citizens, he was meeting one-on-one with council members last week. I actually was talking to one who was sort of huffing and puffing as he was talking on his phone. I said, you sound like you're out of breath. He goes, yeah, I'm late for my meeting over at the arena to meet with Sarver. Sarver didn't even come to them.
It's amazing to me that, yes, the story really started to get some legs because we just became aware of it about a week ago.
Yeah.
And what has transpired in that last week where this vote has now been pushed off until January 23rd. And the city says that they're going to be having some meetings where the public can come and talk about it. But, I mean, there's been polling done. It doesn't appear as though the people of Phoenix really want this.
No.
You've been following this story closely, Lori, and you're pretty plugged into it. Do you see anything developing in the next month that would change what the current vibe and feel is like in the city of Phoenix for this deal and the Suns?
Well, you have to understand that there are three people who are no's. It takes four votes to kill this. There are three no votes committed. You're not going to change their minds based on their statements. They've been definitive that they don't think this public should be spending this money. You have the mayor, who's been pushing it, the interim mayor, Phelda Williams, and two other council members, Laura Pastor and Deborah Stark, who appear to be pretty strong yes
votes. In favor
votes.
Of it, yeah.
Right. That leaves two people in the middle, Councilman Michael Nowakowski, who is facing a recall, and his former chief of staff, an appointed councilwoman by the name of Felicita Mendoza. One of those two, usually they vote as a block, but one of them can kill this deal. So they're really sitting in a catbird seat right now to where they could demand a better deal. I think that they have tremendous power here to force the city and the Suns to go back to the drawing board. And if they really want to do this deal, sweeten the pot by a lot. We're going to do a two-for-one deal. Let's make it a two-for-one deal where the city puts in $1 and you put in $2. My colleague in the sports department, Kent Summers, wrote a column that's on Asia Central. He's very plugged into the sports scene, obviously, since he's a sports columnist. And he says, no way in, excuse me, H-E-you-know-what, will the NBA Board of Governors let this very unpopular owner move this treasured franchise out of Phoenix.
It might be an empty threat in and of itself. Lori, thank you for your time today. We do appreciate it. That's Lori Roberts, columnist for The Republic, the one who kind of broke the story that Sarver was reaching out to on multiple occasions and threatening council members.
Yeah, Paul Calvisi as well for Arizona Sports had made that same point about if the Suns were to move or try to move to another market, there would be millions upon millions upon millions of dollars in fees.
It's a worse financial
that they would incur. Exactly. So it does seem like a threat. Where is there really any teeth behind it?
Yeah.
When you start diving into it, doesn't seem like it.
Holmberg said he'd pay for the moving company to move Sarver to Phoenix. By the way, he's not kidding. I guarantee you he'd pay for the moving company. Anyway, hey, more and more school districts are banning homework. Where were you people when I was in high school? We'll talk about it next.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Where was this movement when I was a little maggot? When I was going to Marshall Elementary School in Tucson. Heck, when I went to Spring Hill Elementary in Virginia. Maybe when I was at Seacrest Junior High in Tucson. The anti-homework movement. Because when I got to high school, finally, I just decided to be my own anti-homework movement, Pamela. I did it unknowingly that there was... I decided that's my stance on this. But more and more, school districts are getting on board with the idea that homework or too much homework is a bad thing.
Yeah, I can tell you, it is.
Yeah?
As a parent of a third grader, too much homework is a bad thing. Too much homework creates a ton of anxiety in the family. Too much homework does not benefit the child. Here's the deal.
I'm ready.
I get that homework is assigned to, you know, practice what you're learning, review what you're learning, apply the knowledge of what you're learning. But keep it reasonable. It is very difficult to get all the assignments done in third grade. And let me tell you, third grade isn't the anomaly here. It was the same thing in second, and I don't remember first grade too much for Riley, but I just remember like this feeling of always having to, where's your homework? What are you doing? And we do homework on the weekends. Riley does homework on the weekends because she's got soccer practice twice a week during the week.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes up a lot of time, and there's not a lot of time to do homework during those days.
Makes sense.
So that's fine. We choose to send her to a school that has homework like this, and we choose to have her play soccer. But what you're seeing is a change in the way districts are handling this.
Okay.
School districts across the country are now banning homework or forbidding it on certain days or just not grading it.
This is better than Christmas when I hear banning of homework.
Well, because the benefits, there have been study after study after study as to what are the benefits of children having homework, and they really can't find any.
Right. It's one of those things like, well, why do you do it? I don't know. It's because we've always done it. Well, does it work? I don't know. We've always done it.
Harris
well,
Cooper is a professor of psychology and neuroscience.
I like this guy.
Yeah, he's a little smarty pants over there at Duke University.
Oh, he has
studied homework.
He's not actual homework. He's studied homework
for 25 years.
You poor guy.
And he's found that homework has little impact on elementary students. Junior high students did show higher achievement when doing homework up to 60 to 90 minutes a night, and high school students up to 2 hours. But after that, there was no additional positive effects. Here, like elementary students, little to no impact. And
so why are you doing it? The answer is
because
we always have. Yeah.
Right.
You're starting
to see more and more districts and superintendents that are moving away from this.
Mm.
In fact, you've got one superintendent in New Jersey who has said the goal of these changes is to give students more time to read, sleep, and spend time with the family, especially at the elementary school level. Because here's the thing Riley does not like to read. That is not something that she's into.
She's not a reader.
I try to build that into our day.
Yeah.
I have the best of intentions.
What if we get a reading about soccer? I'm trying to help.
No, I got you. I've done
things
it
you
all.
Like. Right. Yeah.
But here's the deal.
Okay.
She doesn't have the time because she's got all this homework to do. And then she wants to go
and
play with friends.
When she's done with that, she's like, I'm over this.
She's got chores around the house. We have family dinner every night, so she's expected to be there for that. And then twice a week, she's got soccer practice.
Where are you supposed to fit all
this
other
stuff? That I do feel is quite beneficial to her. So, I mean, parents struggle with this, too. I know that like I'm preaching to a choir for a lot of parents listening right now. But there are a lot of districts, and I think you're seeing more and more move in this direction, that are banning homework. Riley's homework just isn't graded.
What?
There's an expectation that it's done,
right.
But there isn't an achievement grade that's attached to it.
So it can't affect your grades. Does Riley get A's, B's, and C's?
Yeah.
They still do.
Well, you know what?
When do they transfer from like excellent and satisfactory to grades?
There are the percentages, and it tells you where like that percentage range falls into. Yeah.
Because I'm trying to remember. Do you remember
kind of
being Riley's age and doing homework?
No. There might be like a worksheet or two, or spelling words.
So it is a bit of a change.
I remember spelling words.
Again, my memory, let's be honest.
I would have to read stories, and I would have spelling words.
Yeah. I think.
And there'd be like math flashcards.
Or the tables. You had to do the tables and things.
Some of the homework she has, I'm like, good night. And a lot of it.
In
like,
third grade.
Even in like first and second grade, she couldn't do it on her own. So it becomes mom and dad's homework, too.
Mmm. That's where you got the retention. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
Down with homework. There's something we can all get behind, right? Especially, again, if it has no
benefit.
Impact. If it does not benefit the student, it's just busy work.
I still make her do it, though. Even though it's not graded, I still make her do it. What does that say about me?
that you still believe. Well,
well I mean, really, like, if a teacher tells you to do something, I want to teach her that she's supposed to do it.
Yeah, that's a tough argument to make against there. The NFL says it is not going to pay ransom money to see videos of players committing crimes. But should they? And are the videos going to come out anyway? We'll talk about it coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
A couple of weeks ago, Pamela, we talked about the... I think it was actually last week. The fate of NFL running back Kareem Hunt, who was, I believe, leading the NFL in rushing. Up until the point that a video surfaced of him physically assaulting a woman in a hotel hallway. The Chiefs cut him. He currently is not with a team. He's not playing football. And one of the arguments was that the NFL couldn't punish this guy for something that had happened months prior because they didn't have the hotel surveillance tape. The reason they didn't have the hotel surveillance tape? Well, the hotel was under no obligation to give it to him. And that somebody who had access to it was actively trying to sell it to other media outlets.
NFL said that it took a look at the police documents from that incident. They spoke with the investigators. They had not seen the video until right. It was posted on TMZ. Now, the league also has investigators that requested the video from the hotel, but said they would need a subpoena to see it.
Okay. So here's the deal. The question is, because the NFL now has come out through its representatives and say, even in light of this situation, we, the NFL, are not going to get into the policy of paying to see these videos. Now, is that a principled stand? We're not going to be extorted. You know, how many people could come out of the woodwork? Hey, I got a Snapchat video of one of your players smoking weed, you know, and if you give me 20
grand.
You got
to act on all of it, too.
I'll give you 20 grand if you can see the video. Do they become... get extorted basically for that? Or do they continue to stand by a pretty thin argument that, well, we're just going to only go by the evidence that we have access to, and when the new evidence eventually comes out, because these videos always come out, well, then we'll just react again.
I think that's what the NFL has to do. I think that that's what they have to do. Because if they start paying for videos, which, again, they say... they're not going to get into the business of doing. But you do open Pandora's box in that sense, because you will have every Tom, Dick, and Harry that are going to go to the Cardinals or the Steelers or the Chiefs or whatever it may be that have video footage of a player who may be acting inappropriate. Okay, you said smoking weed, for instance.
That's just an example.
So
I'm sure they exist.
I'm sure they do, too. And imagine that the NFL starts paying for these videos. And then somebody comes to the Steelers and says, I've got a video of fill-in-the-blank player smoking weed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? Look at this one.
And the team or the NFL doesn't pay for that video.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually it becomes like this major video for some reason. I don't know. Maybe that player gets into a car accident because they were high. And then it comes back that the team didn't even investigate that there was this video that was offered to them and they didn't take it. Well, I mean, it's just, where do you stop? It becomes a very slippery slope that you then have to respond to every single video.
Okay.
Respond to what you know and what you can get. And it appears that there are investigators trying to get it, but they just didn't have the subpoena.
Well,
in this case,
and
to
therein,
do so.
Therein lies the argument. How do you believe they really want to know some of these? Because that's one of the
you
arguments.
You can make that argument, yeah.
That Ray Rice was the first one.
That was the elevator?
That was the one where the video came out of him literally knocking his then-fiancé, now wife, out.
Good night, girlfriend.
But he was suspended by the NFL before the video came out because they were aware there was an incident. Then when the video came out, they had to go back and say, well, now we're kind of resuspending you all over again.
Sure they did. Absolutely they did.
And is the NFL going to be, because I could argue that this puts them in a pretty tough position, where they're going to punish people based on like a written police report. Said suspect was involved in altercation with person B. It was physical. Okay, we're going to spend you for three games. Then you see the video go, oh my God, that was a right cross. He knocked her out.
But here's the
deal.
You're
suspended for 10 games.
Yeah, and you know what? And they're going to have to do that. But I know that in my life, I make decisions based upon the best information I have at that time. If the NFL, in the Ray Rice situation, as an example, had the best information they could get at that time, that's what they have to do. If that information changes, then your decision can change.
I think there is an argument to be made. And the NFL doesn't. Can we acknowledge this? I mean, we establish a fact. The NFL doesn't like these stories. These do not show the NFL well.
No.
So how enthusiastic is the NFL in digging up these videos? And are they basically hoping, well, maybe they just won't come to light?
I'm sure that there's a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to keep in mind, you got a TMZ that's on your tail that is willing to pay tens
Who knows
of thousands
what, right?
of dollars in order to get these. And if and when they do see the light of day, you're going to have to clean up the mess. That's just kind of how things go.
I think they've set them. I think they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. Honestly,
how do you win this one?
The NFL. If you start paying for videos, guess what?
Ugh.
You're going to spend all day going through videos.
And is that what the NFL is supposed to do?
I don't think they have a vested interest in exposing all their players. So then they just have to react to when the videos come out and say, oh, we didn't know there was a video.
Okay.
Yeah.
Handle your business now.
Ouch. Protect the shield. So which is worse? Paying off porn stars to protect the president.
Wow, okay.
Or a video of him saying he can do whatever he wants to women. We'll talk about the latest court revelations regarding the National Enquirer coming up next.